Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is April 16th, 2021, and I'm your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Magnum PA, Nebulized Magnesium for Pediatric Asthma. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Anthony Crocco. He's the Deputy Chief, McMaster Department of Pediatrics, Acting Head of Pediatric Cardiology, and creator of Sketchy EBM. Welcome back to the SGEM, my friend.
Hey, great to finally get back in touch with you, Ken, and do another recording. I know it's been a while.
It has been far too long since you were the guest skeptic. In fact, I went back and looked, and it was 2 years ago, 2019. Can you remember 2019? Oh, it's just a COVID blur, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't remember anything pre-COVID now. In fact, I don't remember anything pre-today.
It seems like it's Groundhog Day. Everything's March 2020 over and over and over again.
Absolutely.
But to remind you, we were talking about probiotics for pediatric gastroenteritis.
Yeah, Ken, that was a long time ago. Like, I don't know who's worried about pediatric gastroenteritis these days. Everything seems to be COVID-related.
COVID, COVID, COVID. But over the last 2 years, you've been busy climbing the hospital administration hierarchy. Now the deputy chair of Department of Pediatrics and acting head of Peds Cardiology. Next stop, the C-suite. And the C stands for Crocco.
Yeah. Well, it's a small step up from my role in the emergency department, just looking at some of the bigger issues that affect our Department of Pediatrics. And so in the deputy chief role, I'm sort of helping the head of pediatrics kind of navigate some of that. And I am definitely not a cardiologist, just helping navigate some of the issues that they've been having in terms of resources. So I'm learning a whole lot.
Well, it's great to have you back. And I'm ready to hear about a case that you've brought for today's podcast.
Perfect. Well, let's talk today about a four-year-old girl with a known history of asthma who presents to your emergency department after a one-day history of runny nose and cough. Her usual triggers are upper respiratory tract infections and cats. You don the appropriate personal protective equipment, wondering if this might be COVID, and on initial exam, she has minimal air entry, has biphasic wheeze, is only saturating 92% on room air, and has suprasternal retractions. You give her an initial pediatric respiratory assessment measure, or PRAM, score of 8, and consider her to be having a severe exacerbation. You give her a dose of oral dexamethasone and start her 3 back-to-back treatments with albuterol and ipratropium bromide. After 1 hour, she is still working hard to breathe, and her PRAM score has improved somewhat, but is still at 6, denoting moderate asthma. You wonder whether magnesium is indicated now, and rather than starting an IV to give it that way, you wonder if you could just nebulize a dose instead.
Well, asthma, as you know, is a common presenting complaint for children in the emergency department, and we've covered asthma a few times on the SGEM. But you mentioned the PRAM tool in the case scenario. Can you explain further for those not familiar with the PRAM score?
So, Ken, the PRAM score is a tool used to assess the severity of airway obstruction in pediatric patients. The PRAM was published in 2000, Chaloux et al., and validated in 2008. The PRAM consists of 5 clinical elements: oxygen saturation, suprasternal retractions, scalene muscle contraction, air entry, and wheezing. A score of 0 to 3 is considered mild asthma, 4 to 7 is considered moderate, and 8 to 12 is severe.
I'll put a table of the PRAM score in the show notes so people can see how to calculate that score. The Canadian Pediatric Society guidelines reaffirmed in 2017 the recommendations that the initial management of pediatric patients with severe asthma exacerbations consist of the following. Keep that oxygen saturation greater than 93%. Inhaled beta agonists. Inhaled ipratropium bromide. Oral steroids, consider giving IV steroids, consider continuous aerosolized beta 2 agonists, consider IV magnesium sulfate, and keep the patient's NPO.
For children with severe asthma, IV magnesium has been shown to significantly decrease hospitalization rates, though practically, these children are rarely sent home after this IV treatment. As IV magnesium requires an intravenous, a painful and often distressing procedure in of itself, and the magnesium can, when given IV, cause hypotension, an alternate delivery system would be of benefit. And I can speak to this personally. When my daughter needed an IV for bronchiolitis and dehydration, it took 8 pokes to get that IV in. It's almost torture.
And Anthony, I will put in the Canadian Pediatric Society guidelines on this in the show notes for people to review. What's the clinical question?
So our clinical question today is, does nebulized magnesium prevent hospitalization in children with moderate to severe asthma?
And the reference?
Xu et al., effect of nebulized magnesium versus placebo added to albuterol on hospitalization amongst children with refractory acute asthma treated in the emergency department, a randomized clinical trial in JAMA, November 2020.
Well, looking at the reference, I noticed there were some superstar authors on this publication, like Dr. Amy Plint, who was on the SGEM number 167 discussing bronchiolitis.
Yeah, Ken, there's some real heavy hitters in this one. The who's who of Canadian pediatric researchers are here. And you can see that on the list are people like Friedman, and we've talked to some of his papers in the past, including SGEM 122, looking at ondansetron for gastroenteritis, looking at gastroenteritis half-strength apple juice in SGEM 158. And previously, we've talked about probiotics in SGEM 254.
Yeah, these authors come from the PERC network. Isn't that what it's called in Canada, a PERC network?
Yeah, it is, Ken. And PERC is really a multi-site, multi-center association of pediatric eMERGE researchers across Canada, thus PERC. The equivalent in the States is PCARN.
All right, well, let's run through the PICO. What was the population?
Children 2 to 17 years of age with a previous diagnosis of asthma presenting to a pediatric ED with moderate to severe asthma after receiving 1 hour of treatments, including 3 inhaled albuterol treatments, 3 inhaled ipratropium bromide treatments, and oral corticosteroid. Moderate to severe asthma was defined by a PRAM score of greater than 4.
There were a number of exclusions, and I'll list those in the show notes. What was the intervention?
The intervention was 3 consecutive doses of nebulized magnesium sulfate, 600 milligrams, with an albuterol treatment, 5 milligrams, delivered through AeroNebGo nebulizer with Idehaler holding chamber.
And what did they compare it to?
They compared it to 3 consecutive doses of nebulized placebo with albuterol, 5 milligrams, delivered through the same nebulizer and holding chamber.
All right, let's run through the outcomes. What was their primary outcome of interest?
Their primary outcome was hospitalization for either persistent respiratory distress or the need for supplemental oxygen.
And there were a number of secondary outcomes, and I'll list those in the show notes. The author's conclusions were, quote, among children with refractory acute asthma in the ED, nebulized magnesium with albuterol compared with placebo with albuterol did not significantly decrease the hospitalization rate for asthma within 24 hours. The findings do not support use of nebulized magnesium with albuterol among children with refractory acute asthma. End of quote. All right, Anthony, let's run through the quality checklist for randomized control trials. Ready to go?
I'm ready, Ken. Bring it.
Number 1, are these ED patients?
Yes, Ken, they were. They were recruited from the PEDS eMERGE specifically.
All right, were they adequately randomized?
Yep. They used stratified block randomization by site and age.
Did they conceal the randomization?
Yes, they did.
And the patients were analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized.
Yes. To quote the paper, quote, all analyses were specified a priori and performed according to the assigned randomization group, end quote.
The patients were recruited consecutively.
Yep.
Were they similar with regards to prognostic factors?
Yes, they were.
Were all participants unaware of group allocation?
Yes, Ken. Quote, study participants, research nurses, ED staff, and the study analyst were blinded to the treatment assignment, end quote.
Was everyone treated equally except for the intervention?
Yes, they were.
How was the follow-up?
Excellent. It was 99.8% follow-up.
And all patient-important outcomes were considered?
Yes, they were.
And the final question, the 11th question, the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
No, they were not able to show any significant treatment effect.
All right, let's go through those results. There were 816 patients eligible for analysis. The median age was 4.5 years. About 2/3 were male. Median PRAM score was 6, and 44% of patients were hospitalized. What was the key result?
So there was no statistically significant difference between the nebulized magnesium group and the placebo group.
Yeah, and that's for the primary outcome. That's for hospitalizations. What were the actual numbers?
So 43.5% in the magnesium group required hospitalization versus 47.7% in the placebo group.
And that gives you an absolute difference of minus 4.2% favoring magnesium. But if you look at the 95% confidence interval, it spans the line of no difference. And the p-value, if you're a frequentist and interested in the p-value, it was 0.26.
In addition, they found no statistically significant superiority of magnesium over placebo in any of the subgroups.
How about the secondary outcomes?
So there were no statistically significant differences in any of the secondary outcomes.
And the adverse events were infrequent and not attributed to the treatment.
Also, admission to the ICU was the only serious adverse events and due to asthma, not the experimental therapy.
All right, those are the results. Let's talk nerdy. Now, you might be a bit rusty. It's been a couple of years. Have you got your nerd on?
Yeah, I do, but I always forget, what's our magic number here? I can't remember if it was 4 or 6.
Well, you're allowed to do 4 as long as it's followed by 5, and you're not supposed to do 6. You're supposed to combine 2 together so you always land on 5.
Okay, and 7 is out of the question.
7 is way off, and 2 shall only be counted if on the way to 5.
Okay, here we go. So the first thing is that this was a, quote, negative study. This was a really well-done randomized controlled trial that found no statistical superiority of the nebulized magnesium in this patient population compared to placebo. It could be labeled a negative study, but it is very important that this study be published, reviewed, and discussed. Publication bias is well recognized in the medical literature, and we need to value, quote, negative studies as much as we value positive studies in our quest for the truth.
Yeah, the author should be commended on asking an important question, conducting the trial, analyzing the data, writing it up, and getting it published. Another really important point is they didn't try to spin the data.
Yeah, kudos to them. The second thing is the optimized delivery of magnesium. They used equipment in the Magnum PA trial that might not be standard everywhere. Specifically, they used the AeroNebGo nebulizer with Idahaler holding chamber, which apparently delivers 20% medication to the lungs versus only 4% that gets delivered with conventional nebulizers. Had they shown a difference, we would be asking ourselves whether this can be applied to centers that don't have this optimal setup.
Yeah, the fact that they didn't find a statistical difference makes me believe the results even more. And rural and small community hospitals are unlikely to have such kind of equipment. If it doesn't, quote, work in an optimized system with the best technology, it's very unlikely to have a clinically meaningful impact in the community setting.
The third thing that's worth talking about is sample size. Early on, they had planned for a small number of patients required for this study with an N of 284. The calculation was based on a hospitalization rate of 30% and powered to find a 15% absolute reduction with nebulized magnesium.
However, during the early part of the study, they observed a hospitalization rate of around 50%. No in-group analysis was performed at this point, so blinding was still maintained. But what they did is they redid their power calculation based on that admission rate, and they powered the study to find a 10% reduction in hospitalizations rather than a 15% absolute reduction in hospitalizations with nebulized magnesium. This resulted in a need of 816 patients, and it took 8 years to accomplish.
Quite the achievement. Now, the fourth thing to talk about is just severe asthmatics. Another point to make about sample size would be about the small number of patients in the severe cohort, which was only 16%, as per the PRAM score. The vast majority, 84%, of the children included in this study had a PRAM score less than 8, or moderate severity. One reason they did not recruit as many severe asthmatics is they often received IV magnesium before being considered for the trial early in their presentation to the emergency department, just based on physician judgment.
And the fifth and final point, and I think this is really important, is that about intravenous magnesium. This data applies to nebulized magnesium for the treatment of moderate to severe asthma in children. And we should not overinterpret the data and conclude that IV magnesium does not work in these patients. All right, it's time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusion.
Ken, we agree with the author's conclusions and appreciate their work conducting and publishing an amazingly well-run study with negative results.
Okay, can you give us an SGEM bottom line?
If using magnesium to treat children with moderate to severe asthma who don't respond to initial albuterol and ipratropium bromide, use intravenous magnesium because the evidence does not support using nebulized magnesium.
And can you resolve the case that you presented?
Recognizing that nebulized magnesium is not the way to go, you decide to put an IV in and give her a dose that way while you continue with albuterol treatments. After a painful COVID swab and several hours in your emergency department of albuterol treatments, she begins to improve, but not enough for you to be able to send her home. She is admitted overnight and in the morning is markedly improved, allowing her to go home. Her albuterol treatments have been spaced out to every 3 hours, and she is discharged home pending her COVID swab results. Proper instructions are given to the parents regarding inhaled beta agonists and steroids at home, as well as reasons to return to the emergency department.
So, Anthony, you're a PEDS EM superhero. How are you going to take this new study and apply it clinically?
So, Ken, for children with acute moderate to severe asthma who are not responding to my initial treatments, including 3 back-to-back inhaled albuterol ipratropium bromide, as well as oral steroids, I will not be using nebulized magnesium. Instead, I'm going to consider IV magnesium.
So what are you going to tell the patient, or in this case, probably their parents or caregivers?
In this case, I would say that we're going to give your child magnesium through an intravenous. We once wondered if it would work to give it inhaled like the other medicines that we're using, but we haven't been able to show that giving it that way makes any significant difference.
All right, it's time to announce the Keener Contest winner. And last week's winner was Gary M. Arbuckle. He knew Scoville heat units are used to measure how hot a sauce is, and that's the sauce that we like to use on our nachos. Did you bring a question for this week's episode?
I did, Ken. So the question this week is, what did the P in PRAM originally stand for in the acronym?
Wait, you mean it didn't stand for pediatric?
I don't know.
Oh, well, if you know the answer of what the P in PRAM originally was for, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com. With Keener in the subject line, the first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. But the rest of you out there, you can earn CME credits and support the SGEM all at the same time. The content's always free, but there's a small fee for the CME. Please consider signing up today. You can earn up to 26 CME credits in just 6 months for doing what you're already doing, listening to the SGEM. All the support is very much appreciated. Well, thanks, Anthony, for finding time and coming back on the SGEM.
Thank you, Ken, and I hope it's not 2 years before we do another session together.
I hope we can do it in person together once all of this COVID stuff blows over.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right. Well, I need you to read the tagline.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.